Most of you know who we are. We are Larry and Dot Chup from Northern Indiana. We're employed by Rosedale Mennonite Missions, as most of you know it as RMM. And we serve as directors of the Rosedale Business Group. And we'll tell you a little bit more about RBG at the end. We were asked to speak on the subject of business transitions for several reasons. Maybe three reasons. The first one was based on some feedback that came through from the Boost surveys. And the second is because we made the transition from business ownership to what we're doing now. But the reason we're up here is because some of you are responsible for having filled out those surveys, and maybe that's not so good. So, now, as we start, maybe everybody wants to get up and go back to back. Anybody want to do that to start off with?
Yeah.
Not. We're not speaking this morning from the position of being trained professionals in the areas of the specific disciplines that we're going to be talking about, but rather from our personal experience, which does bring a certain amount of expertise because we've been there, we've done it. It may probably not be like you will do, you might do it, but I assure you that every one of you is going to be in transition at some point. It's not going to be a choice. We will all move on eventually. We will all, if you're in business, we will all lose your business. You will have to leave this life. It's a great, great thing. Actually, so, Dot?
There are many successful people in this room who have done things very well, or at least you look like you have. Today, we take consolation from a bit of wisdom literature found in Proverbs 27:17, where we find this: iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. We're trusting this to be true for the next hour, and also for the entire Boost a retreat. In other words, we expect to learn from you. We're talking, talking to a group like this, I find it a bit intimidating because we can easily assume that y'all already know this information. But I'm guessing that some of you will find some things that maybe you didn't think about.
Dot, when you mentioned that iron sharpens iron, one thing I did remember or thought about is that Diego and Gloria are here for this weekend, for the whole Boost retreat. Take time to talk to them. You don't have to speak Spanish. You can manage. They have a lot to share. They are a piece of iron that could sharpen you. I would like to tell you a story from the Global Disciples about some business information. This is a story that I heard, I think it originated in Africa, when a training was provided for some people as far as going into business. And after the training, someone came up and they said, you know, now we finally know the secret that all these business people know and all these rich people know. We now have the keys and we have learned something that will help us. And that is kind of the way we have felt over the last 40 years. We have been learning some of these.
I'm going to be your bumper buddy here. There you go.
Well, I should just take that off. You know, there was 18 inches up here, but it's a lot warmer up here than down below. In Luke 14:28, we read this about calculating the cost of a proposed project. For which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Sometimes we start an endeavor without having done a very good job of this. The first time we went into business, we did so with little forethought. We had lots of energy. In the marketplace, we thought that, you know, we were going to have great success. We had an excellent product. We were sure the marketplace was going to be the path to our door. Rather simplistic, right? We did have a business plan, and we thought we had enough operating capital. I said that I would work as hard as possible with that business to make it a success. And I did.
Did he ever?
To my detriment, but I went into that business just before I turned 30. And my mindset at the time, if I go into business before I turn into 30, and if it fails, which is not going to, if it fails, I will have enough time to pay it back before I turn 65. Well, that actually happened. I'm not quite 65 yet, but did manage to get it paid back. In other words, it failed. The rule of thumb that we kind of went by is that the first year you're going to lose your shirt, the second year you might break even, the third year you might make some money. That was for the industry we were in. And it worked pretty well that way for till about the fifth year. And then the economy changed and...
They weren't beating a path to our door.
They weren't. And we lost our shirt.
And... In all, we had 7 businesses. Most of them were very small. One failed, the one we're talking about. And the others we just discontinued for various reasons. So today we care deeply about your experience. So that's why we're here this morning. And if we can help somebody avoid some of the mistakes we made by talking about some of the things we wish we would have done and done differently or known, it's worth it. As we think over our life, we're very aware of this statement, you don't know what you don't know. And even if we try, and we try hard, we still don't know what we don't know. We're slow learners, aren't we? When I think about some of the things we wish we had known or done differently, one of them is to have put more thought into how we would end the business we began. For example, if you think about planning a trip, most of you plan the trip, including when you'll come home or when the trip will end. So often we go into business without planning or thinking much about the journey or how we will bring it to completion. A successful journey includes planning for the journey, starting out on it, arriving at the waypoint or waypoints, and returning home. We want to emphasize how important the initial steps of starting a business are. To think about in the initial steps, we want to emphasize that you think about the end or when you will no longer be involved in your business in the same way you were when you began. This may sound counterintuitive, but from our perspective, planning this part of your business well will not only set you up to exit well, it will give you focus during the active time that is critically important to how you respond to everything you'll face when you're on active duty. When you have planned for your exit, you take action with that in mind. Everyone in this room will face or has faced this or something like it at some point in their lives. This made me think about the lines in the old movie, The Sound of Music, and the lyrics to the song that goes like this. Let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. When you read, you begin with A, B, C. When you sing, you begin with Do, Re, Mi. And then I thought, this is kind of like, we might be talking about more like the X, Y, Z, or the La, Ti, Do.
So we want to talk a little bit about some of the factors of that we should do when we start. And Cordell, 2 days, really. Right place, the right time. First is the business plan. You really should do that. Most of you are very familiar with that. That's something that RBG requires of any project that we get involved with worldwide. We ask for a business plan. Most of the people we deal with have no clue what we're talking about. But RBG wants to actually help build people. So that's why we do that. There are a lot of good business plan templates available, and what we like is that it forces us to think through processes and think through potential pitfalls. That is a very strong point of the business plan. Many accountants have extensive experience and expertise in this area as well. Not all, but many do. Sometimes what they have to say may feel like a bucket of cold water poured over your idea, if you have a good one. However, if you don't take advice from people with their expertise, you may wish for more advice. You may wish for more than a cold bucket of water when a crisis hits. Good accountants will want you to succeed, and their advice will be to that end, and for your good in the long run. I would much rather have an accountant that tells me I have a bad idea than one that just agrees. I've had both kinds. The one that we've had the longest, over 30 years, was not afraid to tell us we had a bad idea, or that's why did you do that? You know, you went in there almost trembling because you were afraid that he was going to chew you out for something. I like it.
We still time our meetings with him.
Another factor is, second is cash, which is obviously the fuel that allows activity within an endeavor. This is a very simple statement. We all agree we need cash. And that when there's no cash flow, though, for whatever reason, no matter how profitable the business, it will struggle and probably die if you don't have cash flow. This is a little bit like painting yourself into a corner. You've got lots of paint, but you don't have any room to move.
So the third is insurance. Can your business survive if you're not around or unable to manage business? How will your family be cared for if something happens to you? Then there's partners. This refers to any dilution of ownership or management authority. So you think you need a partner? We were told not to consider bringing a partner for a task you would typically engage a professional to perform. Examples of this would be an accountant, or an attorney, or et cetera. Ask yourself if you really need this specific person for a partner, or do you simply need a specific person to do a specific task for a specific time? Give a lot of careful thought before you offer a partnership to anyone. A side note, we did have partners in the business. But we still want to emphasize how important it is to evaluate a partnership very well before entering it. Beware of 50-50 partnerships. There are too many cases of them not being workable. You may say that you need a partner for funding. Evaluate whether that's really the case. Could you get funding from a commercial institution, for instance? Occasionally, you hear of someone who is truly a silent partner, who is content to ride along and accept whatever outcome occurs, although this is very rare. Most silent partners want a lot of control.
Recently, I was told of a situation where a company was struggling with direction and needed help. They wanted to bring someone in with experience in the industry they were in to help them realize their market target objective. They found someone who would help for a fairly high salary, in addition to wanting 8% of all gross sales. In their case, and probably many of ours, there's no way that would work. This is essentially an example of having a partner without any official ownership who would receive much better compensation than any of the owners. I have not heard whether they took that offer or not yet. It's something that I will hear because it happened in our community. Here is something that we did not do but would do today. And that is we would use evaluation tools such as personality evaluations, strength and weakness analysis, and those types of tools. If I'm going to be working with someone for a long time, I want to know how we will work together for the benefit of the company. We see this as extremely important. According to John Stalwart, I would like to not focus as much on their weaknesses, but rather build on their strengths. In other words, have everyone be used where they are most effective.
So we're going to talk a little bit about buy-sell agreements. Whenever partners are involved, a buy-sell agreement is extremely important. No one should enter into ownership position without taking this step. I'm sure you, like us, have heard many stories of people who entered partnerships, especially with family members or very close friends. And we've heard the stories about how they came to points of serious disagreement without the buy-sell in place. The statement of blood being thicker than water, or that of lifelong friendships being almost family, is a certifiable myth. The bloody battles that can erupt, causing great damage due to misunderstandings between lifelong friends, have the capacity to take out a business, or at the very least trigger a serious crisis. While a properly executed buy-sell agreement is not a guarantee against these dangers, they can greatly diminish when agreements are put in writing in the initial steps of starting your business. An old Chinese proverb says, "The faintest ink is more powerful than the strongest memory." So even if it's written in pencil, this one says ink, but it's better than your memory, because your memory fails, unfortunately. We strongly encourage you to work diligently through the details in every aspect you can think of as you start out. Or, if you're already in business, do it now. We suggest hiring a lawyer who has experience in business and who each party is in complete agreement to hire. You won't regret having done your homework.
It's also quite important that you review and completely understand the agreement that was written. It's so important to personally read, and I'm going to say this again, and understand fully what's placed in that document. Understanding is so, it can't be minimized. I personally know of a situation where a lawyer wrote himself into the agreement in order to benefit. This actually wasn't discovered for quite a few years. And luckily, nothing happened during that time. But the work then went to another lawyer, and it was corrected and rewritten. And the state of Indiana finally disbarred him for at least, or put him on, I don't know what you call him, disbarred him for a year. It was a guy that tried to sue us too. That didn't happen to us, but the guy was a crook, and there are people out there like that. And some of them actually come across pretty well. So this is very, very important and can make a very substantial difference for the parties involved. Something that looks good at the time, that in your rational mind, this sounds totally fair as a buy-sell. You might run past a lawyer because, as Patty said yesterday, I lost my train of thought. I mentioned your name, but...
Yeah, see, it's like a brain block. My wife says the same thing when she thinks about me.
Now you really made him lose his train of thought.
Anyway, it was good, but forget it. The best time to sign a non-compete is when you're signing papers, or prior to signing papers. So there are many, many stories of financial ruin because it wasn't completed prior to business startup. Another story, heard 2 weeks ago. Two fellows went into business, 50-50 partnership. They did very well. The business grew quite large. No buy-sell whatsoever. And the one guy got to the point where he didn't like the other guy quite as well as he did when he started. And the one guy said, "Yeah, you know, I'm going to get out of this business, and you can just pay me for my portion, and we'll be all set." And the other guy said, "Wait a minute here. We built this together. Well, I'm going to go do my thing." He says, "Okay, if you're going to go do your thing, I would like to put together a buy-sell." Well, it's way too late. The end result is that those guys are essentially enemies. Not only has it affected them and their families, it affects all the vendors they deal with, all the customers they deal with, because if one of these fellows is dealing with a customer or a vendor, the other guy refuses to work with the same vendor or customer. So something that happened in a very small relation or a very limited relationship has spread out over a larger area, affects other people. So non-competes are not just for business owners, but should be considered for employees as well. Sometimes we think just owners should do that. Not true. You should have that for your employees. What if a valuable employee of yours leaves and decides to duplicate what you're doing and take your customers? When you build a company, what is it that you're selling? What will you sell? Something I hadn't thought of, because I'm sometimes don't think along these lines, but another item that we sometimes don't think about, asking ourselves, am I building a company to merely build a product or provide a service? Or am I also working at building a company that will have a saleable value in the marketplace in the future? Because if you build a successful company, once again, you're not always going to own that company. Someone else, if you pass away, someone else is going to own it.
So now we'll move into what were some of the things that drove us to deciding to sell our business, the last one we were in. So over the years, we had discussed triggers that we felt were important to us when it might be the right time to transition to something else. Several of those triggers were having sufficient funds to retire, having health insurance that's manageable. Yeah, that's a big one. Where are you, Keith? Deciding when we would want to draw Social Security and sell out at an age when we could still work toward accomplishing our life goals, including travel with physical agility. We, over the years, had met and known numerous people who told us that what they plan to do when they retire, only to hear of their passing within a very short time of retirement.
Initially, we committed to be a part of the last business for 3 to 5 years. The reason we had chosen an unrealistic, optimistic 3 to 5 years was because we had other ambitions for our lives. Earlier in our marriage, we had spent 2.5 years in Nicaragua and with Mennonite or voluntary service with Rosedale Mennonite Missions. And we wanted to get involved in a similar situation sometime in our life later on. So we tried to make life decisions with that goal in mind. We often use flowcharts to make major decisions, and we had one in place for that this transition as well. So let's look at some of those triggers a little bit more in depth. We talked about what life might look like once we were no longer involved in business. How much money would we need to survive financially? Would we need any income? And if so, how much? And where would it come from? What kind of lifestyle were we going to look at living? Here's kind of an interesting one. How much should our estate contain when we continue on our journey out of this life. How many of you have thought about that? Okay, some work needs to be done on that. We have about 5%, maybe not even the tipping point. That's a big question. Should one purchase long-term health care? A lot of debate about that. Would we want to travel, and if so, how much? And the list goes on and on and on. And there are other questions that are important to you that you need to ask. We're fully aware this looks very different for us because we never had children. But it is still extremely important for us to take those steps and have those conversations. If you've not had that conversation, they're going to be important for you as well. A crucial factor in making the decision to sell was whether the company had enough capital or capacity to purchase our shares. While a company may very well have a substantial value on the balance sheet, as is often the case, ready cash is often not readily available.
So remember, we had talked about 3 to 5 years. We'd entered our 13th year, and I had come to a point where I felt it was time to begin to make some different moves toward a change in how Larry was involved in the business. With the level of involvement he had reached, I was seeing a change in him emotionally and in his health. From my perspective, it was becoming unhealthy on many levels, and I had suggested to him that I felt it was time to make some moves towards selling his shares or to see if he could find a way to work fewer hours. It felt critical to me. I wasn't sure what to do, but I felt something needed to be done. In retrospect, I should have taken a different step because what I did made Larry uncomfortable. I take responsibility for moving without mutual consent. I popped his bubble. In all reality, at that time, it seemed to me Larry was so overwhelmed with the situation, and I didn't think he was able to understand what I was feeling. After some considerable thought, I decided to seek some counsel on my own. In May of 2013, without telling Larry, I sent a message to John Stallworth, and in it I said something like this: "I'm not sure how to begin this message, John. My husband Larry and I met you at the Boost Retreat in Walnut Creek in 2012. Your ministry and insight rather blew us away, and I've spent a lot of time reading your books. I find a deep resonance as I study what you and your partners have written." Having said that, I'll get on to the reason for this message. Without a lot of detail here, I have a few questions. And I mentioned a bit about what I was sensing, and then I asked this question: "Do you have resources that provide guidance or counsel as we process the decision of someone transitioning out of business?" And at that time, Larry's share of the company represented the largest share owned by an individual within the company. After some back and forth messaging with John, I confessed to Larry about having contacted him.
Not a good day.
Without informing him that I was going to do so, that was not the best thing for me to have done, as we still differ on this process today, and I think we just demonstrated that. I guess we'll have to say what's done is done, and it turned out well. From my perspective, I'm not sure how else I could have done it. But in reality, I deviated from our plan, our way of making decisions, and our use of a flowchart. In retrospect, I should have been more forthright with Larry.
That has something to do with women's minds and men's minds, I think.
And transactional and relational. Can you tell?
We did survive.
And there's a great opportunity for a six-step apology in there.
Oh, this doesn't mean anything here, but in Latin America it means no way.
We're still working on that.
That's all right. Maybe so.
So we began a conversation with John that resulted in our joining a serving leader cohort as one of the tools we would use in this transition. Although this cohort did not contain exit strategy resources, the material covered was and continues to be valuable for us. It was a training tool that equipped us for much of what we continue to do now. We found this cohort to be a very positive step and extremely helpful on many levels. We were surrounded by people who provided valuable information, counsel, and resources as we embarked on this transition journey. Although during the time we were engaged in this cohort, we did not share with the group exactly what our intentions were regarding the transition. We could share with them in a way that was incredibly helpful. The level of confidence in the room was exceptional. We found an acceptance that was very healthy, and at this point in our lives, this was important. So let's move ahead with the transition, defining the transition process.
So we used a lot of resource people, and this is, and from our perspective, we highly recommend resource people are important here. And here's our list, but it's not exhaustive. Don't do for yourself what you can hire an expert to do. Remember, you don't know what you don't know. An outside consultant, a personal financial advisor, a business appraiser, an accountant, a business real estate property appraisers, and an attorney. Each and every one of these are resource people more than paid for themselves, and we are deeply grateful and wouldn't want to have done it without any one of them. Once we'd made the decision that the time had come to move forward with the transition, we talked to our personal financial advisor, and I believe we have one in the room. There you go. I suppose there may be others, but don't miss this step. And he did a complete financial analysis for us, taking into consideration our current lifestyle, goals we had for what life might look like after we no longer were part of the business, current liabilities, current net worth, and many other factors. This was very time-consuming and a bit intimidating, but it was well worth the effort.
Our financial advisor was well-trained in this process and provided assistance when we had questions or had trouble projecting ahead how this might look. We did this to get a complete picture of the finances we would need for the rest of our lives. I wasn't quite 60 around that time. Obviously, you can't plan for everything, but that should not keep you from planning. This is a step you will not want to skip. The information you receive from this study will tell you whether the timing is right or not. It is very informative and helpful on many levels. The last thing you want to do is make the move to leave a business and be too far along in the process to have to turn around or turn back, only to find that you don't have enough money or investments to carry you for an extended time. You could completely jeopardize your ability to survive financially, changing everything you were setting up to do at this point in your life. Dot, I'm going to add one more thing in here. Yesterday, Roseville Business Group had a board meeting, and it was shared the scripture that you should give away. You shouldn't, if it's in Matthew, give away, and there's a certain portion of that one verse that mentioned that you would have a purse that doesn't wear out. That could be likened to this. We somewhat have an aversion to building up a lot of financial resources. It kind of happened. And so what do? There is a sense that you as business people may feel, we talked about this yesterday, that you may feel guilty because you have resources. What do you do with that? If you give it all away and you don't use it as a tool, then it becomes worthless. And you become somewhat ineffective. That is so, so very, very important as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. So once we felt our finances were in order and we were assured we could proceed, on the day before he turned 60, Larry very cautiously presented the idea to his partners by asking that if he chose to sell his shares to the company, what would it look like to them? Of course, the sale would have to be financially sufficient for us to accept the offer. We began to involve more resource people at this point. Here is where the groundwork we had laid at the beginning began to come into play. At the point where the partners presented an offer, we could refer to the buy-sell agreement that was in place from the beginning. An initial offer didn't meet our accountant's assessment of what he thought the business was worth, so we started working through the various points set forth by the buy-sell. This required two separate financial appraisals, one done by our accountant and the other by a large firm chosen by all the partners. So here is where the written in ink factor became very valuable.
The large financial firm evaluation came back in a basic agreement with our accountant, who had pointed out some problems. He was a bit of a thorn in the flesh of some of my partners. Seemed every year that we got a tax return, because he did our taxes, he reviewed our returns,
the corporate
returns. And every year there was something that wasn't quite right. And we always ended up with more money, which I didn't complain about that, but some people, it didn't feel very good to some people. So we were very happy to have this guy on board. The appraisal came in somewhat below the actual value, so this step required us to personally hire a second.
The appraisal on the property.
Well, the next step was a property appraisal, and because it came in, we had agreed that we would have an appraisal done on the business property, and if that didn't meet our expectations, then Dot and I would have to hire another appraisal personally, which we did. And the buy-sell agreement, it did come in substantially different. The agreement that was written in the buy-sell was that both appraisers had to meet and had to agree on the value. These guys both paid their way well. At this point, with all the papers, appraisals, agreements, and we met with our attorney then to review everything. This may seem like overkill, but there is a possibility. All these steps may not be necessary for you, but once again, don't leave anything out there that creates a doubt about the final settlement if it is at all possible. These were steps in a completely different world that had been our reality up to this point. Not making sure that all this is done before you start your business can result in something difficult to retrace or to redo. By the way, it can also cause sleepless nights. If you value your sleep, you don't want to miss this. Sorry to be redundant, but there are no exceptions to this rule to have a buy-sell in writing, even if you're going into business with family or best friends. And of course, it's only as good as how well it's written. Remember, you don't know what you don't know.
Let's think about when it comes time for you to tell about what you're doing. It may not even go through, and you could save yourself a lot of explaining. In other words, the sale of your business might not even go through, and then you don't have to explain to people, well, it didn't happen after all. And so we felt it was important to keep the plans confidential until the final papers were signed. It's a situation where you'll want to be very cautious who you have conversations with and what you say to people. Remember that anyone you talk to about it, including family members, will not have anything to lose if they inadvertently let something slip. But it could jeopardize the process for you and complicate the issue considerably. In our case, we didn't tell anyone until the paperwork was nearly completed, and then we only told a couple family members and key people. Once the papers were signed, we told the rest of our family members, and then it was public knowledge.
I knew that I left money on the table, as it were, before I sold, because I did sell in a very profitable time. There was enough pre-sold business to take the company almost a year down the road. So the short of it is, it would have been financially advantageous for me to stick around another year.
Financially.
She was afraid I'd have a tombstone instead. Buyout offers may not necessarily have cash available to actually make the purchase. According to our accountant, one of the largest hindrances in business buyouts are that there's no cash. You have everybody out there wants to buy your business, but they only want to buy and then pay you for it without cash. So if it's not back with cash, you could end up with only the cash that you had at closing. There are lots of stories of that. There are ways to make sure this will work better. Your financial consultant or attorney will have some other ideas about this. A safety measure is to put a lien on everything in the business until you're paid in full. This gives you additional protection. That wasn't my idea. It's so nice to have professional people to blame for some of this. And as long as your former company still owes you, you should receive all the financial reports. Make sure there's nothing strange happening, because you still have a stake. Once you sell out, and if you are still owed money, a negotiating point to be considered may be for you to tie up what is owed you in an interest rate above what the company is paying for their commercial money. That way, there's a motivation to pay you off. When you are no longer there, there's a lot of things that can happen. Life after business, what does it look like for us now?
Well, it's a really big change. It's kind of one that it's really hard to prepare for, I would say, because all your life you've been going to work, maybe punching a time clock, maybe not, but getting a paycheck every week, kind of knowing what to expect. So when you no longer have that, in that way, life just changes and it feels completely different. So think about those kinds of things.
One thing I'm thinking of right now is bosses. We submitted our lives to another group of bosses. I'd like to have them stand, the RBG board and Joe. We are in debt to these guys. They are great to work with, every last one of them. We really appreciate you guys.
Yes. So that's what our life is now. We're honored, very honored to be where we are, and we love our job.
This was actually a goal to do what we were doing. What we're doing started about 40 years ago. It took a long time, and many, many times it didn't look like it was ever going to happen, but it did. So putting things down, goals, important. I don't do a good job with it a lot of times, but it works. Some resources. We like conferences like this.
Yeah, some of the things that we didn't do over the years that we look back and maybe wish we would have done more of, We didn't attend a lot of seminars or retreats or events like this, maybe because we thought we couldn't afford it, or we didn't think we had the time. Maybe we felt we didn't need it, or we didn't want to expose our ignorance, or we felt intimidated by more savvy people.
We just believe that ongoing learning is very important. This morning, if you will, could we pass those? We put together a short, very short survey. It's going to take you maybe 3 minutes if you're slow. But ongoing learning is so important. From the RBG perspective, we would like to know more about you. Frankly, it's intimidating to be up here and knowing that some of you are extremely successful, much more so than we were. And we want to know what this room contains. You don't put your name on this. It's anonymous, but we have somewhat the demographics and how to be able to serve you better as Boost participants. So if you'll fill that out and then pass them, you can turn them over if you want, and pass them down to the other end, or just walk down there and drop it at the end of the table will be great. There is one thing. I mentioned the accountant we have. This book, I paid more for it than what he sent me a bunch of books. I asked him, I said, would you consider some of your books for sale out here? He's a bombastic type of guy. He's not afraid to tell you if you're wrong. You will find a whole bunch of things in here that if you or you know someone that is starting in business, there's just a lot of practical information in here and a lot of examples from his 45 years of doing business with a lot of people, especially in the Anabaptist community, as well as others. They will be out here on the table. They're $15 each. I paid 20 plus. And if you'd like something like that, we'd highly recommend that you pick one up. So start here.